Hello, everyone. This is Sparkle On. Sparkle is your happiness, passion, and self-worth. And today, I'm so excited to have Jasper Gray, who is founder of the Vendetta Group, which is a management and production company here in LA. They've sold shows and worked with writers and directors and to all the major streamers and networks. And you've also produced your own film this year,
yeah.
Independently Financed, which is, for those listeners that don't know, it's a huge deal to be able to secure funding and get your project off the ground. So we're going to dive more into Jasper's journey today because I heard him speak at a panel last week here at Noia House, and it was just awesome. It was so great to get to know you. So thank you for joining the show today.
No, thanks for having me on. Stoked to be here.
So did you always know you wanted to be in entertainment and storytelling?
Absolutely not. It's complicated. I grew up in Los Angeles, and so everybody I knew was the child of somebody mm-hmm. who was in entertainment. And the, oh, we're going to get dark fast. the amount of darkness that was there, whether from being in the shadow of their parents or the shadow of the industry or just the shadow of the Roosevelt Hotel, right, was palpable always. And, you know, I always ask this question to people who are not in the industry, like, what do you know about the industry? And the two words that always come up is, can you swear on this show?
Absolutely.
Is liars and assholes. Like, no matter who you ask, that's what comes out. And so you got to ask yourself, like, why you would want to be in that industry, right? And my parents were in the entertainment industry as well. And I saw how poorly they were treated. And so I absolutely just wanted to stay away from it. The ups and the downs, the roller coaster of the highs and the lows, but then also just this strange sense of community that's a word that gets thrown around a lot today, but especially in Hollywood, and is usually is not actually community itself, right? So it's interesting. My journey then took me to New York to study law. Because I thought that was going to be a cleaner profession where you don't have to deal with bad people. Turns out that's wrong. And also, I was over there and I was like, oh, gosh, I don't like this whatsoever. I'm a storyteller, right, in my heart, you know, whether it's an artist or along those lines. I made way back to Los Angeles and said, hey, I'm going to start entertainment. My parents were like, do not do that. And here we are, you know, 15 years later. So
how did you, like, what was that moment or the realization that you're like, I need to be working with stories?
Yeah, I think that there's one thing that ties all of humanity together that you can actively be a part of, and that's art.
Right.
For me, film and television, like I was saying a while ago, is it just gets to me. It's the thing that cuts through my steely exterior and just I can start bawling like a baby. And you can see humanity play out in front of you. And I really, really love that through the highs and the lows. And I think that we forget how important cinema is and how important television is. It's not just there as it was developed to sell soap, right? It was there to create the imagination for the rest of the world. And I think seeing that globally now, where it's not Hollywood focused, it's more of a global enterprise now, is amazing. That's the global story. And if you can be a part of that, there's nothing else in this world that I'd rather do.
Why do you think imagination is important at all ages?
I think it's too easy to get sucked into the story around us. You know, and I think that we forget that everything's a story, whether it's the history books, you know, who wrote the history books, right? Any kind of text is to a certain extent an act of art, right? So we forget that imagination is all around us, but there are commanding ideologies that are, you know, propagated and circulated. So if you're not in the business of creating other narratives or showing other narratives, there's no inspiration and there's no window for other people to even see that a different life is possible. So I think for children, for adults, for ancient people, and for frogs, probably. Like, it's very important, you know? My dog absolutely watches the shows with us. Barks at the gunshots. She hates violence. Aww. And, you know, cuddles during the loving scenes. Hates the dogs on the screen, too. It's insane.
Oh, my gosh. That's so funny.
She can see a dog this small from a mile. Like, it just is in the background. She goes crazy.
She doesn't want to be friends with the dogs on screen. I feel like some dogs are like that.
I don't know. She's got a weird way of making friends, but I do too. So,
so you obviously started the Vendetta Group. How did you know that it was time to take the leap of faith to start your own company?
So my journey's been a little bit interesting. I don't have any formal training whatsoever in the industry. I have never worked at a bigger production company or a management company or an agency or any of those things. I got super duper fortunate. I'll tell you, you saw it the other night at the panel, but the method to the madness is it's a formula. But I got super duper lucky, met a writer when I was 22. I was still finishing college at UCLA. I transferred from NYU to UCLA. And we just got along famously. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And he was like, we're just talking about our favorite stories and some Lovecraftian mythology and all this kind of stuff. And then we said, hey, why don't we do a project together? And I was able to find some development money for it. We ended up selling it to Sony and a couple other companies as production houses beneath it. And it was awesome. And that was my first immersion into like, oh, shit, you can do this? And, awesome. You know, at that point, I was like, I'm made for this. That film never happened.
Interesting.
And, you know, that process of, you know, going through the highs and the lows even then is something that we can dig into. Because that's its journey in itself, and that's how I got to wanting to start my own management company as well.
Okay. And then you said the film never got made.
Yeah.
How did you deal with essentially believing in something so much to honestly not have it come to fruition? Like, what did you learn from that?
Yeah. I think that this is what I share with all creatives is that initial burst for me, especially with young talent, young artists in general. And artists, I guess, writ large, but you've got this bipolar swing usually between like giant ego, oh my God, I'm going to take over and change the world. And then, oh my God, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
So that's super common amongst everybody. And I went through that version of by myself and felt very lonely and isolated in that because you want to just be a success.
Yeah.
Then talking about the reality of that is it's like, it's dark, you know. I had a couple of different reps at the time, and they were great companies, huge companies, right? And they were like, oh my God, you're the next J.J. Abrams. And there, I was like, I am the next J.J. Abrams. And then I'd go home and I was like, I'm not anything, you know? So it's that up and down. But I wish, in hindsight, I wish that I would have had somebody who was just going to take me out for a beer and be like, hey, that's awesome. You are talented. What's next? Mm-hmm. Let's go to the next one. Let's stop focusing on this one. Take it as a win and keep building, keep moving forward, you know? And I think that it's hard when a young artist's ego gets fed too much or in the wrong way because it leads to all of the negative things.
Right.
It leads to anger. It leads to depression. It leads to substance abuse. It leads to all of these different, and that's the story of Hollywood, you know? So going through that process myself gave me such an intimate knowledge of what I would have wanted at that time. It's not that my reps did anything wrong, by the way.
Right.
But I needed something different to help me growing at those early stages in the correct way. You know, and I had to do a realignment over several years after that to come back to who I was, what was important to me, and the reality that I came back into entertainment to do something different and build an actual community of kind people.
So would you say that's a core focus of your job as a manager is helping artists like still have those big dreams, but then bring them to reality and coming up with like a logistical plan of action?
Yeah, a little bit. It's a hard dance to do, right? Because you don't want to poo-poo on anybody ever or be like, hey, you're a dreamer. Artists need to be dreamers, right?
Yeah.
The way that I look at it is you've got three departments. In creativity, you've got the artists, you've got the middlemen, and then you've got the business affairs people, right? So these people always bring you to reality, the money.
Right.
Right. And the artist should be always the ones most tapped into saying something, inspiring, being a part of something larger and creating something larger. That's why they need that ego, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And these people in the middle, whether they're representatives or producers or whatever, need to have a foot in both worlds. Mm-hmm. Right. So they can dream with the artists, mm-hmm. and have fun with the artists, but also come down to reality and negotiate deals or put together memos or something like that. You know,
how did you learn kind of, I mean, negotiation is an art in itself. How did you learn to do that?
A lot of learning. I think that everything requires a lot of learning in the industry, especially from my perspective. But that's the fun part to me. Mm-hmm. I love a challenge. And it's ironic because I started by going to pre-law school thinking I was going to be a lawyer looking at contracts. And I was like, fuck this. I don't want to look at contracts. Now all I do is look at contracts.
Right, right.
You know, I think that there's so much in the industry that you learn by osmosis of being around really smart people and people who are really good at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the first couple of times, you know, I was very lucky to be working with lawyers and agents who were, one, sharks at their job, which I mean that in the best way possible, but then two, grounded enough to share and teach me.
Mm.
So I've been taught by countless people throughout the entire journey so far, and I still learn to this day. This morning I woke up, I jumped on a Zoom, and, you know, this guy was sharing what he does at his company over in the UK, and I was like, oh man, thank you for teaching me. Mm-hmm. This isn't even a business meeting in my mind. This is a learning opportunity.
Right.
You know, every client is different. Every project is different. Every script is different. Everything's different. So you're constantly learning all of the time. So the way that I learned was just by doing it, just getting in there and doing that. And that's the way I started my company too. It was just like, hey, I don't really want to listen. There isn't somebody's mandate or company structure that jives with who I am and what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to bullshit my way around. I want to be very, very specific about the artists that I work with, very specific about the projects that we work on, and also very specific about the way that we handle like financiers and deal negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of nasty little trends that, you know, propagate and, you know, throughout the entire entertainment industry. And you just look at it for a second and you're like, why?
Yeah.
Why is it built this way?
Mm-hmm.
Why do we have to do things in such an adversarial methodology? You know, there's a lot of nasty little kinks because Hollywood is such a enclosed box most of the time. It's a black box of like, you don't get to know what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's silly. What are you hiding in there? You know, like let's share, let's learn. I don't know. You know, I mean, if all of us were looking at a contract, we'd probably have different opinions on what it is, even if you've never read a contract in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know how to read English and have ever played a board game or learned any set of rules, which we all have.
Right.
You have the power to do it yourself. I keep hitting the mic. Sorry. You can do it yourself, and then you need to lean on people with expertise of how to get to where you want to go.
And so you talked a little bit about, you know, some of the contrasts of the community, specifically in the entertainment business. Right. It's kind of like there's no in between. You either have the biggest supporters, greatest mentors in the world, or frankly, really shitty people. How have you found community that also just helps you build up, you know, a better lifestyle when this is, you know, your work is your world, it's your passion?
Yeah. Community is a huge thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
So when I grew up, I didn't have any friends. I think I probably made my first best friend around like 22, maybe. And before then, I was always like the outcast who had like big old Coke bottled Nintendo glasses and the roller backpack and liked to draw Pokemon and stuff. And it's like, nobody wanted to hang out with me. That's the story of elementary school, eating alone, crying in the bathroom, like all of that kind of stuff bespeckled my childhood and my upbringing. I was really, really fortunate to always have great teachers as mm-hmm. mentors and friends. And that really hit in high school. So community has always meant something really strange to me, which was, why am I not accepted in the community, right? I always wanted to be part of, invited to something, right? I love being invited to things, you know? Everybody likes being included and being invited. you know, and then once you get to something, it's also, are you in that group? That's mm-hmm. the cool group. What are the cliques and stuff like that? And that's also Hollywood. That's not just high school. That's not just elementary school, right? That propagates the industry. And again, I think it's one of those things that as being an outsider for so much of my life, and I still think of myself as an outsider to this day, it gave me a unique perspective of going, what do I want, right? And so I watched for a long time and I was like, very judgmental, me, you know, but going like, well, this isn't how I would do it. And this is not how I would do it. And then, you know, it got to a point where I just decided to create my own community, you know? So I ran a, it's called a tracking board, which is not the, it's not the, there's a website called thetrackingboard.com. Okay. It's not that. It's their Google groups, right?
Okay.
And it's basically a mail serve. Right. So you've got, you can add people to your Google group and you can email the group and it emails everybody and they can respond. So I made one of those because I'd been in one and they'd thrown parties and it just wasn't what I wanted. Right. Community is always a great idea, but the way that we talk about networking and all these other things, it gets a bad name because it's also done so poorly most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I created a community called The Crux and I started throwing parties. I was surprised when people showed up and then we would throw a monthly drinks and it was really wonderful. I had two rules and they were the main rules that I'd always wanted at parties, which is number one, don't be an asshole. And then number two, find a way to work together, but not tonight.
Yeah.
So much of the time people feel like they've got 30 seconds. I want that person's time. And they've got 30 seconds to win this person over.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that that's really the way that humanity works.
Right.
You know, it's like develop a relationship, I think, is a great way of re-saying networking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah. And it's funny because I talk about inclusion a lot, right? And community being important. Exclusion also obviously plays into this a little bit in terms of, you know, if somebody is an asshole,
mm-hmm.
a conversation can either sort it or it can not sort it, right? And people are totally free to live their life however they want. But if somebody's going to be mean to other people or clicky or these kind of things, I don't want any part of that.
Yeah.
So constantly grooming that community was really important. And, you know, out of it, it's crazy because I've got special thanks on like, I don't know, 6 or 8 films that I had nothing to do with.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
Yeah, it's super cool. The first one was a friend's film in Sundance. I mean, this is years ago. And he was like, stay, make sure you look at the special thanks. Okay. I was going to stay for the claps in the interview anyways. But, you know, and then it listed that. And I was like, oh, how cool is that? And, you know, throughout that process, the financier and the writer and the producer had all been a part of that group.
Okay.
Right. So they all met through the group. And I wasn't negotiating anything. I didn't do anything with that film, right? It was successful on its own. Those guys were fucking amazing. But there was a sense of community in that, right? That they actually met each other and found that they liked each other, then found a project that they liked together, and then made a movie together.
Yeah.
That's really cool, you know?
I think, you know, I've been living in LA for almost 3 years. And when you hear about some of the projects that come to fruition, it's always this natural way of doing things.
Yeah.
And I have a mentor, you know, she's been president of global marketing at some of the biggest studios. And she was like, make friends. Like,
yeah,
it's not, you know, your colleague or like whatever, like make friends. She's like, we all started at like shitty PR jobs. Mm. And now like we do this and it's like, that makes sense to me. And you know, when you were speaking, I kind of got, sad and this, now we're getting a little dark on my side is like, I had a friend that recently just passed away and he was a member of Neue Haus where I work out of, and he did too. And, we connected because well, one, his name was Ace, and I have an Ace of Spades tattoo on me. Yeah, and I'm like very into like blackjack and casino metaphor, whatnot. Mm. But he, that was his nickname. Mm. And ever since then, he was like, I know I want to, like, we would always see each other, always talk. He was always hyping me up. He's like, I know I want to work with you, but I don't know how we're going to work together. But like, let's just keep hanging out. Because we both have this like East Coast energy about us.
Yeah.
He always like admired what I was working on and vice versa. And when you would go into a party or a group event with him, he just like empower you. Like you could be ready not to like socialize, and he would make you ready to be socialized because he was just this light in a room. Mm. And it was never like transactional or anything like that. And like I said, I've only been in LA for 3 years, but I only met him like less than a year ago. Mm. And it just makes you realize like the impact one person can have. Mm. And like, you didn't even know that you were going to be in the special thanks for this film. Yeah. But like, I'm sure when those people are having like coffee or drinks, like your name is coming up because you made that impact. Mm. And I think about like the mission of Sparkle is like, the teachers, the mentors, the friends, the person in the grocery store, like you truly don't know how you're not going to just change maybe one person's day, but their life.
Yeah.
And I think that's so special. And like, it's unfortunate that like Hollywood does get a bad rep because the stories that are being made are supposed to be capturing those moments.
Yeah.
I know we also kind of resonated on our advocacy work in the mental health space, specifically with suicide awareness. How do you see, at least specifically Hollywood, trying to address these types of narratives in an authentic way, but also in a way that like creates real impact to, because this is a public health crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, first, I'm sorry to hear about your friend.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I've had friends pass away over the years, clients and stuff like that. And it's shocking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mental health is a huge thing. And I want to be very like serious about the way that this is handled. You know, there's a lot of talk, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of walk.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'd mentioned, but I ran a suicide hotline for 4 or 5 years out of Cedars-Sinai. Mental health is a huge crisis, right? There's so many ways to deal with it, but really it comes down to an individual as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think so much of what we do in the world is rob or not listen to each other and the identities of the other person. How Hollywood is dealing with that, I can't speak. I don't feel qualified to, you know, dive too far into how the industry writ large is dealing with this. I know that the most important thing that anybody can do is be good to another person, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it is what you're saying. It's the guy at the grocery store. It's the lady at the bagel store. I mean, I only have store analogies right now. Late stage capitalism is in my brain. You know, but there's everybody's a human, and we really, really forget that so easily.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's going through their own struggles. I have my own struggles, right? You know, you got to be serious about it, you know? And that's, again, goes back to the community thing of like why it's important not to just validate in word only, but to really be able to have a conversation with anybody.
Yeah.
You know, and it is a skill to develop. You know, I don't think that everybody is, I certainly was not able to have a conversation with anybody beforehand. Now I'm pretty willing to have a conversation with everybody, you know? I mean, I was taking out the trash the other day and guy comes up, right? And, he's, you know, he's a homeless man or something like that. And I think most people, and I had the guttural reaction of like, oh my God, I'm scared. I have to go right back into the house. I didn't rush. I said, hey. He said, hey. We talked for 2 hours.
Oh my God. That's awesome.
Over my trash cans. You know, and Sam, my fiance, the entire time was like, what are you doing out there? Are you okay? And I was like, no, I'm fine. This is Bob. I don't remember his name. This is Bob, you know. He's fine. He's cool. You know, yeah, he's a little unhinged, got crazy on the sides and stuff like that. And, you know, again, I was taking out the trash, so I wasn't even like in full dress, right? I had no armor. But I especially with homelessness being such a huge problem as well. Like, there's so many problems.
Yeah.
Right? Societal problems.
Yes.
Even localized to Los Angeles.
Yep.
Mental health is such a huge problem in the homeless community, mm-hmm. right? They all, you can't take one piece without looking at everything, right? There are systemic issues that need to be dealt in systemic ways.
Yep.
Not treated with, here's a lollipop, now go away, you know? I had a great conversation with that dude, by the way, Bob or whatever his name is. If you're watching, I had a great time. We also gave him a veggie platter. I hope you enjoy the veggie platter.
Oh, that's awesome.
But, you know, that's the thing. Have a conversation.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid of having a conversation, but also hold boundaries. Mm-hmm. That's that that's the juxtaposition of inclusive versus exclusive, right? Mm. You have to be inclusive enough to be able to have a conversation with anybody, even if they seem like they have completely different opinions than you and all of these different things.
Yeah.
So you're not stuck in an echo chamber. Right? Because I think that that's also a huge problem. But then you also have to know where to draw the line so that you protect your own mental health.
How are you doing that? Or how do you think we can do that in the most polarizing state of our country right now?
That's a really good question. I think it comes down to conversations again. You know, I hate to be a broken record on that, but I have friends on both sides of the political spectrum. And there's the better spectrum that I like to have is if somebody an asshole or not, right? There's so many different socioeconomical reasons why somebody has these beliefs or those beliefs. And part of the fun of being a human and focusing on conversation is learning how to unpack those mm-hmm. in ways that they might not even be aware of, mm-hmm. right? That's where conversation starts and ends for me, is I don't really like talking about generalized political beliefs or any of these kind of things. I like to understand why, mm-hmm. you know, and some people love that. Some people hate that.
Yeah.
Because I like to get my nitty gritty little fingers in and go like, let's unpack this. Mm-hmm. Who is in here really? Like, you know, take off the stickers and the hats and stuff like that. I love this hat, though.
It's a great hat.
Thank you. You're going to have to get you one of these hats.
I would love a hat.
But, you know, unpacking it to go, who's the human being in here? Mm-hmm. Where's the hurt?
Yeah.
You know, because on either side, any strong opinions are usually formed, you know, in the cauldron of fear mm-hmm. and anger. And those are manipulated a lot of the times to create a sword that is made of hate and anger.
Yes.
Not of love and compassion.
And I think a lot of times people are afraid to ask the why because they think that they're either contributing to this hate or that it's justification for hate and violence. And I don't think the why ever justifies it. It's just that story. It's going back to that story. And having an understanding that there's so many layers to us as humans. And that's why community is important, because you learn from it. You learn from Bob. And like,
oh shit, we met at a panel, right?
Yeah.
Like, and you were so inclusive and like with your friends that were there and everybody, like, that's what I'm talking about. That's the sauce. We haven't talked about politics once.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just fine by me.
So can you speak a little bit to fundraising for your film independently? It's a huge accomplishment. But I think for listeners that don't quite understand what that means to get up in front of other people and convince them why this story is the most important story than anything else that they're being pitched. How do you do that?
Yeah, so just to double down on what you said, independent filmmaking is incredibly hard. Yeah. Filmmaking in general is incredibly hard, right? And I don't think that we think about these things very in a helpful way most of the time. You know, I think gone are the days when you can go, hey, I mean, the oldest stories, right? Like Dove S.S. Simmons or whatever, right? Like he would go through the yellow pages and find anybody that said doctor in front of his name and or her name and call that person and be like, hey, do you want to invest in a film? Right. And that was it. Right. And it was it's a different environment than that these days. You know, film financing has become a lot more streamlined with streamers and distributors, and the industry has been changing for the past decade, you know, thanks internet. But, you know, the ways of raising funds are also different, but there's so many stories out there. There's so many platforms for getting your project seen, getting noticed or trying to. What it comes down to is projects are very important, but what it comes down is to the person, right? I think that people in Hollywood, and I say this all of the time, do not treat financiers correctly. Do not treat investors correctly. I think it's too easy to go, this is my shot. I have to do this, you know? And what it leads to is a transactional outreach of people going, oh my God, that's the guy with money.
Yeah.
I have to talk to that guy and I have to get him to get my movie made. From the minute you've thought that as your initial thought, and it's fine to have that, but you need to check yourself, and a lot of people don't check themselves.
Yeah.
That person, whoever they are, made their money somehow. They have an entire life, right? Who knows if they're going through, if they're happily married, if they're going through a divorce, if they've never met the love of their life, right? If they have a bunch of friends, if they have no friends, if they've got questionable people who just want to take advantage of them in life.
Yeah.
You look at somebody, and the minute that you can sense that you might have a target on them, you have to realize everybody is looking at them that same way and how uncomfortable that person must be. And we project onto that person, oh, they're so confident. They've got everything. I'm a lowly filmmaker. I'm a this, I'm a that, right? It justifies then our the too often predatory outreach towards those people.
Yeah.
Because what you want to do is you want to pick their pocket.
Yeah.
You know, and I get that sense too. I mean, it's like as a representative or a producer or whatever, it's like there's this sense you can tell when somebody wants to genuinely get to know you and talk to you. Here's the thing. Just because somebody has money does not mean that they want to make your film.
Exactly. Yeah.
They might not want to make any films. Yep. They might want to make a different film. There might be a film. They might want to do something that's a passion project for them. They might want to do something that's belief focused, right? I have this belief. I want to get this out into the world.
Yeah.
Right. This moment changed my life. I've got a weird relationship with my dad. I want to make a story about that. Those people usually don't know those things. And you will never know those things unless you actually get to know that human being. And, you know, it stacks the mental health stuff. It doesn't matter how much money somebody has. It doesn't matter how successful people have. We see these stories time and time again. It's not just the actor and barista who commits suicide. It's the person at the top of the charts, right, who has been a long-time drug addict, who's been an alcoholic, right, who's got a fucked-up family situation, right, who all people see. Yeah. Is someone who's successful, who has money and power, and they don't see the actual shattered human being behind them. That's part of the huge mental crisis in this entertainment industry as well. We don't see the real human beings.
How do you think we can actually be telling those real authentic stories of these human beings? Because it's so funny. I moved out here, right, to think, oh, like, this is what I'm supposed to do, work in Hollywood. And then you spend a little bit of time here, and I'm really, because I come from the advocacy background, I'm really like, this industry kind of goes against all of my beliefs. What do I do? How do I keep creating my art? And I think a lot of people start asking themselves that, especially when they don't fit in or things like that. And now, and that's why, you know, it's hard, independent filmmaking, but now that's why it's like, well, what can we do to create a space where we are just talking about our real selves? I don't know how studios can do that or will do that.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I work with a lot of studios, right? I'm not knocking studios. I don't have it's the question to me is almost like, I don't like the practices that Jeff Bezos has. Mm. Right. That's when we look at the studios, like we look at like creating change up at the top. That's great. I am not in a qualified position to be able to make those changes. Mm-hmm. That's why person to person and independent filmmaking is where I find my power and niche to be able to affect the stories that we tell, mm-hmm. the people that we work with,
yeah.
the financiers that we work with, right? And that was also the impetus behind starting the company, is so that I can be the control freak that I am, right? You know, I'm a people control freak. You
That's
know?
So funny. I like that.
But I love people.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't mean that I don't have strong opinions on people, mm. you know, but that's how love becomes real as well. Mm. You know, so I think it comes down to like embracing important stories as well, but also told by people who know those stories intimately.
Yeah.
Right. It's not just like, oh gosh, this is the thing that's trending on Twitter. Mm-hmm. It's this month. We have to pay, you know, corporate homage to these things, right? Because it's kind of meaningless.
Yeah.
You know, you get the sense that you're being sold something still, rather than having a story actually by a filmmaker who actually has that lived experience, lend that to their craft and utilize that in a way that then you want to distribute, mm-hmm. right? It's not, you know, we pay... We pay very little respect to the actual storytellers and I pay a lot of respect to the storytellers, right? I'm saying as an industry though, right?
Yeah.
Like it's, well, we need this hot director. We need this hot writer or something along those lines to tell this story. Is that their story?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want to tell that story as part of your, you know, corporate campaign so that you see there's virtue signaling,
yeah,
right? And there's a difference between virtue signaling that we see all of the time and the reality of empowering people who should be empowered.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. No, I love that. And I think it's definitely something to think about as artists, right? Because I think it's easy to get caught up in like, oh, this is what the industry is looking for. I'm going to go write this story because it might check off boxes.
Yeah.
But it's like your best work isn't going to be produced that way. And it seems like you're even selective with even the type of artists that you work with. And they probably in some way need to know like what their roots are in order to like even work with you.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I, you know, I'll back it up a little bit, but like everybody wants a rep, mm. which is crazy to me. I mean, it's not crazy. Mm-hmm. It makes total sense, but they don't care who the rep is most of the time.
That I never understand.
Yeah. And it's just like, I need a manager, I need an agent, and I need three lawyers. And, you know, it's like, have you checked in with that person? Do they represent or believe the things that you believe? Are they willing to fight for the things that are important to you because they're important to them? If not, I don't know why you're working with them, because you want to make money. Okay, that's fine. Are they going to make money for you? Are you going to make money with them? Are you guys going to generate something that you're proud of?
Yeah.
You know, because if you just wanted to make money, go get a regular job.
Yeah.
You know, go into any other field. But if you want to say something, this is the place to say it. You know, I think technology is going to open up the floodgates. Mm-hmm. I'm less of a fear-forward person with that and more of a how is that going to be able to be used and to empower people who cannot find independent financing. You know, it's taking even like the invention of like cell phone cameras and seeing what the Poland brothers or whoever do with it, right? Like, and going like, oh shit, we can do this. We don't need a lot of money. We don't need any money.
Yeah.
You know, even Sam and I are talking about doing like iPhone films, short film together.
Cute. That's fun.
You know, that we're going to spend zero money on.
Yeah.
You know, what was your question? Sorry, I got waxing poetic.
Well, I guess I was just like, I don't remember my question either. Oh.
Oh, so yeah, going back to, you know, this question of getting a rep or something along those lines, it's about, and why I'm so privileged to work with the clients that I have, they all have different belief systems. They all have completely different backgrounds. They all have completely different lived experiences. They live in different parts of the world, mm-hmm. right? We have a huge coterie of clients that live on the other side of the pond in the UK or Poland or wherever. We've got Colombians, right? Like, you know, there's a beauty to that.
Yeah.
Because otherwise we're stuck in this echo chamber.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that all of them come together in one singular way, which is they believe that they've been brought to Earth to tell stories. Whatever those stories are, they have a sense of purpose and drive mm-hmm. to leave a lasting impression on the world.
Yeah.
And again, that's in so many, every artist is different. What is their passion? What is their belief or whatever? Like, I love people that are willing to say, here's my flag. I'm putting it in the ground. This is what I stand by. And as a company, that's what I love. And I'm so privileged and lucky to work with those types of clients and financiers and producers and all this kind of stuff. Like, they all have a moral code wherever it is that they stand by, you know, and it's a really beautiful thing when people can do that. So I'm very fortunate to be around such a great group of people and work with them intimately who have that.
Yeah. It's like building your own like fantasy football team.
100%. I've never played that. I don't play sports, but I have friends who have. But yeah, it's you get to go out and decide who you want to work with today.
Yeah.
You know, and when it gets to the question of, you know, how do you make money and stuff? It's like, you have to believe. You have to believe. That's it. You know, early on when I was, you know, I'd sold that project or whatever, like, it still wasn't enough money. I was working in a warehouse out in like an hour and a half away, 2 hours away every day, mm-hmm. right? Like it was a photo studio in a warehouse. It wasn't as dire as I'm making it sound. It's still a long drive. But like, this is so important to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I've never been afraid of needing to have a job to pay for things. But if you are relying on your creativity to pay for things, especially early on, that is really, really difficult. You see people in the industry for years, decades, like who you can't assume that after making a movie, somebody is a bajillionaire.
Yeah.
I think that's another problem that we have too. Mm-hmm. You know, especially in this day and age, a lot of it's just livable. It's nice livable, right? Yeah. But it's not resting, retiring livable.
Right.
So I think that the expectations are a little bit out of whack from the heydays of Hollywood, you know, but there's nothing wrong with having a normal job to pay for your creativity.
Yeah.
To pay for your passion, to pay for your beliefs.
Do you think it takes away from the artist being able to 100% commit ever, though?
I think that if an artist cannot, I think if a person cannot 100% commit, they're not an artist. Mm. Like, I think that if it's about time, okay? Find the time.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you have to do. You have to commit to, you're either committed or you're not. That's what it comes down to, you know? And it doesn't mean even if you're committed that things are going to work out the way that you want them to. Mm-hmm. It means that you're giving it the best shot though. And if you work to pay for that time, or you work and then you take that time, or you go live on a friend's couch, right? And spend zero monies and try and exist as net zero. Those are all different strategies, right? Papa likes to drive a nice car, you know? And I'm fortunate enough to, you know, have built something that continues growing, you know? But this took time.
Right.
I was never ashamed of having a normal job. I was never ashamed of having a weird job as long as it still paid the bills and I was still able to build what I wanted to build.
I don't understand when you walk into certain communities and you say you do a certain thing and people look at you weird. It's like, those are the types of people that I'm like, well, then you just don't get it because you don't understand how either my friend here or myself or whoever I'm with, like doing what we need to do to make our creativity our main thing.
Totally.
Yeah.
And that is such a blessed position to be able to get to a place where mm-hmm. you can make your creativity all you do.
Yeah.
You know, but I look at it and I go like, how much time did I waste up at the top? Right. Like when I sold that project and, you know, out of college and stuff like that, like how much time did I waste? Now I didn't know, mm-hmm. right? Can't blame people for not knowing. Right. But there's a lot of time spent at bars. There was a lot of time healing and stuff. There was a lot, and I needed to go on my own personal journey, right? Play with the darkness, come to the edge myself to be able to come back into the light and be able to go like, hey, this is a pathway out of the darkness, right? That's huge for me. I think that the strongest people are not the ones that have always lived in the light and stayed in the light. I think that the strongest motherfuckers are the ones that have walked to that edge of that abyss, gone, holy shit, this is deep. This is scary. And found the interior strength to be able to come back to the light. That person's got a journey. That's interesting to me. That's my lived experience.
Well, that's what Sparkle's about.
Exactly.
Like I always say that, like, you know, the sky holds both darkness and light.
Yeah.
And Sparkle was born out of like that dark, dark period of my life. But it was that belief of like knowing there is light because I was told there's light. And I had it once, meaning it can't actually go away. It can't dim. And so your story is very inspiring, even from the work that you do, but also just like your way of being. And this is exactly why you're on the show.
No, thanks.
But thank you so much for sharing this amazing information and what it really means to be an artist and storyteller. So sparkle on.
Sparkle on.
That thanks was so for having fun. Me. I love that.